from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
The Craig Needles podcast and the Friday Roundtable, the post-election Friday Roundtable here at ClassicRock981.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and of course we're brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. I'm here in the studios at 700 Richmond with former City Councilor Hollywood Cheryl Miller, former political candidate Ali Chabar, and Blackburn News Manager Scott Kitching. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Oh, our pleasure. When you offered us post, I you know, it's hard to find post cereal, but I didn't realize we were going to talk about the election.
Yeah. Well, hey, what's going on, post is more popular than Kellogg's in this community.
That's right.
just to be clear. So the election is over, and it went the way that everybody thought. There were a few surprises, though, not necessarily in results, but in voter turnout. We'll get to that towards the end of the podcast. But for now, Doug Ford remains premier with a stronger majority than he had 4 years ago. Your reaction to that result, everybody?
Not surprised at all, because like the two other parties are train wrecks. They're being led with leaders who are not leaders.
And are not in their jobs anymore.
No, isn't that funny? But Roger Cranchi's had a great line. The NDP are the Oprah Winfrey of politics. You got a car, and you got a car, and you got a car. All they did is give, and all they did is tell us that they're going to tax the rich and tax big business and pay for it. They promised things that they could never deliver, and people again in London bought a pig in a poke.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that they needed to be more imaginative with their program, with their platform to get people out to the polls. They lost 900,000 votes compared to 4 years ago. 900,000. I don't think it's because they didn't promise enough, or too much, rather. I think it was because they didn't promise enough.
Yeah, but the thing is, Craig, people want to vote for something.
Yes.
And nothing was provided to them to vote, and the evidence is in the numbers. You just said they lost 900,000 votes from last time. That's after 4 years of a PC government, 4 years of Ford as premier, right? And we know that from past practice that, you know, that it's easier when, because Ford wasn't premier last time, and so everybody can say, all right, well, this is our vision and this is our plan, but you had 4 years now to say, here's the government, here's their platform, here's their record, right? Everybody was upset at the Ford government with the pandemic handling and everything, and despite that, instead of making gains, you lost, right? So if I'm looking in the mirror today, if I'm a Liberal party member, an NDP party member, and I'm looking to blame somebody, I just look in the mirror and see the reflection looking back at me, and that's who I would blame.
Yeah.
I think there's a great amount of truth to the idea that people do want to vote for something rather than against something. I think there is absolutely truth to that. I think at the same time, though, as an opposition party, when you are going into an election against a government that admittedly has dropped the ball on a few things, you have to pound them on that. I have to say that I'm surprised. Shocked, even really, that there wasn't more of that in this campaign. There wasn't more, and again, your mileage may vary on the reasons for this, but there wasn't more talk about long-term care. There wasn't more talk about the number of people who died in long-term care during the pandemic, in private, particularly in privately owned ones. Now, again, you might come down on a different side of that question. But I'm really surprised that we didn't hear more. I mean, that was, to me, as kind of a outside observer, that's a place where Ford was really vulnerable. And there just wasn't a lot of talk about it.
But why wasn't there a lot of talk about it? Like there's
so yeah. The opposition wasn't driving the conversation.
But they were also looking at the polling, right? Initially, you know, 3 months before the election, it's pandemic, right? And then Del Duca has that event and they get absolutely rocked because he's talking about mask mandates and nobody's wearing masks at their own event. And then you ask, to your point, well, why aren't they talking about it? Because the polling said that it wasn't top of mind for people. And if it was, they would have hammered away at it, right? So it's about, the way I look at it is it's that the polling was driving the messaging on that front. And they said, well, we can't win on this. Let's try to find something else. And they got lost and never found their stride. And what happened last night is a byproduct.
And it turned into the red team and the orange teams attacking each other. and ignoring Ford essentially.
Well, it was that battle for second place, right?
Right, it was a battle. But you know, the part about the long term care is you can't fix it in 4 years. Don't forget, I think the Liberals, if they came out and talked about long term care, they would have to reflect on what they did. Mm-hmm. They did nothing. They absolutely did nothing. So the Ford government, which it's been in 4 years, it started out at zero, and as much as you just have to look at the aging population, and you tell me that we're going to have government run all the long-term care homes in this, that's not a good job for government. It's a horrible job. The municipality in London has won the Dearness Home, and at one point we tried to pan that off because you shouldn't be into long-term care homes. The private sector, under rules and regulations that need to be beefed up, I get it, is the way to go. So everybody's running and saying it's got to be owned by the public. We don't have enough dollars to house people. We're certainly not going to have enough dollars to build long-term care homes. So it's a topic for a long time, but there's got to be a plan put in place.
Yeah, and I think that's you kind of touched on it there, Cheryl, when you said, you know, the regulations need to be beefed up. And you know, you guys would know this better than I, but I just kind of look at that and I say, and I think to myself, like, if I'm a candidate, particularly an NDP candidate, because as you said, the Liberals are, their hands are not, right, you know, perfectly clean on this matter. But if I'm an NDP candidate, I wonder if there's value in the campaign to say, you know, this government has made it a lot easier for private companies to make pretty good profits in long-term care while providing substandard care to grandma and grandpa. Now, it's an emotional appeal, right, which, as we know, sometimes works. So I guess I'm just a little bit surprised that we didn't hear more of that out of particularly the New Democrats.
I just don't know what the message of either of those campaigns was. And look, Andrea Horvath and Stephen Del Duca have paid the price for that in the last 24 hours here, both of the polls and with their jobs. But like, if I were to ask you, Ali, what was the NDP campaign about, or what was the Liberal campaign about? What would you even know what to say?
No, and that's after the election was run, and then we had the actual election, right? And we follow politics like it's fantasy sports, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I can't answer that question, and Scott can't answer that question, and Cheryl can't answer that question, then who's going to answer that question?
But it's your average voter's not answering.
They're not going to answer that question, right? But it's more than just platform or policies or ideas. I think it's a reflection on the leaders.
I agree
with
that.
And you can have the greatest platform or the greatest policies or the greatest vision for the province, but if you or the greatest message, but if the messenger is flawed, then it's never going to resonate. And that's what we had here with the Liberals and the NDP. But let's talk about Del Duca first. Del Duca failed to define himself at the outset after he got the Liberal leadership. And it's a kiss of death in politics. If you don't define yourself, you allow your opponents to define you. And he was tagged early on, regularly, repeatedly, as it was the Del Duca win party or the Del Duca win government. Kiss of death, right? And then he spent the entire campaign trying to refute that narrative, to say, no, I'm not that person. I'm not what they say I am. And if you're always saying what you're not telling people what you are. And he was done at that point. And Andrea Horvath, fourth time? Was it the fourth time that she ran? Fifth time, right? Oh. The electorate had 4 or 5 looks at her and passed every single time. And if she didn't resign last night, and I understand that the NDP maybe has more patience with their leaders than the PCs or the Liberals, and there's reasons for that. But if she didn't resign last night, and by the way, when I say resign, it's like Del Duca resigned. Yeah. No, man, you were fired, right? It's like my boss calling me in and saying, Ali, you're fired. I'm like, you can't fire me, I resign. You were fired with impunity. Yeah, that's right. Horvath was fired with impunity. Yeah. They had no choice but to resign. But yeah, it's not just a policy thing or a platform thing. It's a failure of leadership, and we saw what happened last night.
But the NDP have always said, I mean, you heard it from Andrea Horvath time and time again, we're the only party that can stop the cuts. And they sort of focused on that. And you're right. I mean, the last time we had, when Ford was elected, they wanted the Liberals out. They wanted them done. They had done enough in this province. People were suffering from them. So they brought Ford in. They want Ford. They like that he's going to go in a direction that the Liberals weren't going. He's upset. I mean, the unions are upset. The teachers are, oh my God, you know, school.
Trade unions aren't upset. They all endorsed Ford.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
No, but that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing. And that, and, you know, tip of the hat to Monty McNaughton on that, right? Wow. Because if you had said to me 4 years ago that we're going to have not one, not two, but a, like a dozen different trade unions endorse the PCs, I would have laughed you out of the room. Mm-hmm. Laughed you out. But then Monty, through his work as Minister of Labor and the work that he's done, I mean, my goodness, he's done a spectacular job in terms of flipping that script. And, and that's now. Talk to me about 4 years from now and see what the political landscape will look like on that front.
Yeah, no, I think that that absolutely is something that Monty McNaughton deserves a lot of credit for and should be getting a lot of credit at Progressive Conservative Party headquarters today 100%. For the fact that that's something that happened. Let's talk about what happened locally. The three London ridings that are exclusively London stay the same. They're all the New Democrats. Elgin, Middlesex, London, different MPP, but same party, Progressive Conservative, Jeff Urich out, Rob Flack in. That wasn't a surprise. I predicted in the my predictions podcast on Tuesday, or Wednesday rather, that this was going to be the way it would go. Was there anything from the local results that, that caught you off guard or was a little bit surprising based on how things went provincially, or did you think that my races perhaps might be closer?
Well, I was disappointed, to put it mildly. I mean, we don't have a seat at the table again. One of the things that I'm very concerned about is prior to the election being called, they were talking about the workmen's compensation relocating into London, which would be a huge, huge cue.
As far as we know, that's what's going to happen now that Ford has been reelected, you think?
Maybe. Why would you bring it here in Ward community that only supports the NDP? Why would you do that?
Put it in South London.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Rob, like, if it's going to be in anywhere, it should be in St. Thomas, because Rob Flack won well. I mean,
put it in the south end of the city.
Fine.
And then it's if it's got to go in a conservative riding, put it in the south end of the city.
Yeah.
Like, I think that you would have a harder time convincing some WSIB workers that you're going to go live in St. Thomas now, as opposed to you're going to go live in London now. I think that's a bit of a different conversation for them, but put it in the south end of the city.
But London's going to push back because they want it downtown. We've got so many vacant properties.
That's
there's
true.
An opportunity to create tenants. Everybody's going to want to be on that train. So, but he said, you know, we'll see after the election. And, you know, people
I guess
in
we'll
London.
See.
Yeah,
we'll
I know.
See.
People in London.
So let's just look at the races where the Conservatives thought they could get North Centre. And some of the projection websites, I think iPolitics had it as leaning slightly progressive conservative going into the vote last night. Turned out that was off by 4,000 votes or so. But where, like, did the Conservatives really put out the full effort in Fanshawe? Because I feel if there was a fully funded, well-rolled-out Conservative campaign in London Fanshawe, it might have been a different story.
I know Fanshawe's your bailiwick, but generally speaking, the Liberal candidates, I don't know if you can say underperformed, because that assumes that there's a certain kind of threshold of expectation that you had, but in London Fanshawe, the Liberal candidate really didn't show up on the map, right? Didn't show on the radar. In London West,
same thing.
Here's the thing again. I can't even remember what the candidate's name was.
London West, it was
Vanessa Lalonde.
Vanessa Lalonde.
But again, my point that I have to struggle to remember the name kind of tells you something, right?
Well, she didn't have lawn signs until about 2 weeks ago.
No, I know. But when we look at London North Centre, if the candidate in London North Centre or the candidate, so Paul Pilato or Jerry Pribble had a stronger chance. We had a stronger Liberal candidate, then I think their fortunes would have been different. But what we had in North Centre was theoretically a stronger Liberal candidate. We had these polls that were published by Kate Graham's campaign that about a week ago that said that she was up by 11 points. There was questions about the validity of the poll, the sample size, all of that stuff. And it was kind of what I found was telling me was kind of radio silence in the aftermath of that. And then we see 1 week later, not only were you not 11 points up, you finished a distant third, I think was, you know, by a 2-1 margin. So whenever we see these types of polls that are being pushed by parties, and by the way, I remember, listen, during my by-election, that crap can I say crap? I can say crap now,
you
right?
You can go further if you want.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That crap happened to me. I remember in the with a few days before the election, the NDP published, I'm doing air quotes for your listeners there, a poll that showed the NDP leading regionally, and they actually had it look like a a part of the London Free Press, even though it was a paid advertisement. So that stuff happens during campaigns. It's just the weight that you put on it. But Jerry Pribble could have won, I guess, theoretically. Paul Pilato, both, again, competent candidates, very
good candidates.
Right, would have done great things for London. Yeah. And they're on the outside looking in, right?
So all three of them.
Yeah,
all
well, them. But they like, in the case of Paul Pilato, he went up against a really good candidate who got 55% of the vote 4 years ago. And she didn't get that quite this time, but he knew he was getting into, that he was going up against a popular incumbent that has won a bunch of elections.
Yeah, well, I call her Perfect Peggy. And I said that to them, you know, guys, it's going to be really tough because you're not going to be able to, there's no holes for you to dig into. Mm-hmm. The only holes are the leader and their platform, which is really basically non-existent. London Fanshawe, the conservative.
There are some holes there.
The conservative candidate, yes, is there ever, was probably one of the best we've ever had in London Fanshawe. Yeah, she ran a good campaign, clean campaign, had young people involved, which I love to see, mm-hmm. because when I see all the old people coming at the door, they're the past. We're the past. It's the future you want. She has had a good campaign, but don't forget the mindset in London Fanshawe is it's always been NDP, federally. See, Irene Matheson spoiled it.
Irene Matheson and Sean Lewis built that fortress.
They did.
It is the most, if it's not the, like, either London Fanshawe or Hamilton Center or Windsor West, one of those three is the most solid NDP riding in the country.
Yep.
So here's the question. And
they're all about the same.
And this is my question for you, Cheryl, because you're plugged in that riding. How much support was there from the party for the conservative candidate in that riding? Could there have been an upset had there been more? Because I mean, you think about how the provincial or national, depending on what you're talking about, the support, the head office support for the local candidate. Sometimes it varies. Sometimes there's a lot. Sometimes there's very little. How much was there in this case? And do you think if there had been more, perhaps we could have seen an upset in that riding?
Well, when I ran, we had a lot of support in London because they really wanted some conservative mm-hmm. candidates. Our problem was HUDAC. So, and I know there was significant provincial support for Paul, and I know for Jerry. And I, quite frankly, every time I went to anywhere with Jane or at our campaign headquarters, we had ministers in there. So there was support, and because they really believe strongly that with the potential of jobs and employment and opportunities in London that they've been offered, that we've been offered, that it would sway the voters to think, hey, I'd like to keep my kid here. I'd really like to have them live close to home so we can see the grandkids and the rest of it. Didn't happen. So if they'd put more money into London Fanshawe, I don't think you could beat her, because you've got that orange machine that doesn't care who the candidate is. If they're orange, I'm supporting them.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting too, something that you just mentioned, is when Cheryl ran in London Fanshawe, I ran in London West, and Nancy Branscombe ran in North Centre, you referenced Tim HUDAC, right? Mm-hmm. The difference between then and now is that last night the PCs got a supermajority, right?
Yes.
And for me, when I'm kind of deconstructing, looking at it, thinking, all right, when we ran...
they didn't like him.
They didn't like HUDAC. They elected a liberal government. Mm-hmm. And I thought at the time, like, okay, you know what? Well, if there was a PC majority or a PC government, maybe the fortunes in London would have been different, right?
Right.
The candidates aside.
We've now seen that twice in a row.
We've now seen it twice in a row, right? Where we've had London stay orange despite two strong majority. Like, Ford got a strong majority last time, and then a stronger majority. And despite the foregoing, London's orange. And I have... Some issues with that. But listen, I would say the same thing if it was a Liberal government and we had NDP members or a NDP government with PC members. We need a voice at the table, right? Yeah. Now, basically, people outside of London are making decisions about London. I know we have Rob Flack and previously Jeff Urich, but man, how does London, population 440,000 or whatever it is, not have a voice at the table about the things? And we've basically, London voters, they say the customer's always right and the voter's never wrong. I get it. But at if somebody's making decisions about the 519 here in London, mm-hmm. I want somebody from here at the table advocating, and we don't have that. And so, I don't know, I kind of throw my hands up, but, you know, it is,
at
it is
what
it is.
At some point, though, these are relatively, you know, we talk about degrees of well-liked, but these are relatively well-liked incumbents that won re-election, you know? And it's hard to beat incumbents who do not have government baggage. It's hard to beat incumbents all the time, but incumbents without government baggage, they're tough to get out.
But it's not a reflection on Terrence, Peggy, or Teresa as individuals, right? Because I'm not talking.
I think it might be a reflection on Peggy as an individual.
Yeah. I mean, I live in that riding, and I can tell you that she's responsive to constituents. And you know, again, people might have varying opinions on how much of a factor that is, but you have to think to a degree it is. And she's well liked in the riding. She's responsive to constituent concerns.
She's at everything.
And she may be a name that you hear for a replacement for Andrea Horvath.
I think I'm going to say this on Twitter later, but Peggy Sattler being the interim leader of the Ontario NDP, I think would be a very, very smart move by the Ontario NDP.
Yeah, well, I hear chatter about Terrence too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Being the leader?
Yeah, temporary. Interim.
Okay. I hadn't heard that until about 4 seconds ago.
No, I hadn't heard that.
I don't know who's going to wind up being, like, Catherine Fife's already been asked about it, and she said she's thinking about it. Merritt Stiles has already been asked about it. She said she's thinking about it. I don't know who the next leader of the NDP is going to be, and this is a good way to transition into that conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they do. I don't know what they should be looking for. But if I were them, I'm looking for someone who's outside of the traditional NDP strongholds. Yeah. So maybe Catherine Fife is the person. I think Peggy's more of an interim leader, but as opposed to a long-term leader. I don't know if she's going to run the leadership race.
Yeah, it hasn't worked 5 elections.
They need somebody else. They're getting somebody else.
Yeah, they need to clean the whiteboard and start over again, because what they've been doing isn't effective.
Well, and a new NDP leader that sees reality for what it is, right? This isn't the NDP from 20 years ago. Like, we were just talking about it before, about how many trade unions are endorsed the PCs, right? And there's kind of that old versus new vision. And I think if they keep going, it's what's Einstein's definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So if they keep going back to the same type of leader, the same type of thing, guess what? You're going to get the same results. You haven't held government since 1990 when Bob Rae was premier, right? 1990, which kind of doesn't feel like that long ago, but if you do the math, that's a long time ago. And so you need to have, I think, you know what you need to find? You need to find a Jack Layton-esque leader who has that charisma, that ability to connect in a way on a provincial level.
Well, that's like building a hockey team and saying, well, we need to find a McDavid.
Yeah, maybe it's a once in a lifetime thing.
There aren't a lot of those around, you know.
There's been talk. You're hearing talk about Terrence. I've heard talk about Jagmeet Singh
coming back to Ontario
and saying that, well, he can't ever become prime minister because of, you know, political realities in the country, but he could become premier of Ontario, right? And so I have heard that.
He would have an electoral appeal in Ontario that he will never have in Quebec. And we can talk about whether that's right or that's fair.
And Alberta.
But it's, Alberta's the same thing, fair enough. Parts of Alberta, yeah. But we can talk about whether that's right or that's fair, but it's true. Like, you know, it's...
Parts of Peterborough.
Yeah.
fair enough. There's, you know, one of the problems is that Andrea never once stood up and said to Ford, you know, you're not doing it right, but what I'd like to suggest is, why don't we sit together and figure this out, because we want this, you want this, let's find the happy medium. I always said good legislation isn't black and it isn't white, it's gray. You got to meet in the middle. But the whole time, everything he did was wrong, terrible. There was not that willingness to sit down, roll your sleeves up and get it done. I mean, let's face
it. Get it done.
Yeah, get it done. Nobody wanted to sit down and do that. Until you do that, it's always going to be us versus them. And I think this whole election was that. He did this. We would have done this. Yeah, but you've never been government, and you're not likely to be government. Mm-hmm. So how do I know? Where do you get the money from? I think the irony is Del Duca saying, and we're going to restore grade 13, which they took out. And we're going to hire 3,000 teachers, but they increased the teachers' college to 2 years. And quite frankly, you can't find enough teachers to staff the school.
They didn't take grade 13 out. I graduated high school in 03. That was the
No, they took it out of the platform.
No, but, oh, they took it out of the platform.
No, but, let me ask you a question.
I thought you meant they took it out of the curriculum.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question on that very point.
Sure.
If I'm Del Duca and the Liberals, oh, actually, you know what? Let me ask you, you three. If I were to say to you, rank the top 50 issues impacting Ontario, where would you rank restoring OAC on that list?
Not there.
49?
Not sure what it would be on the list.
Now, if I go back to the question you asked me 10 minutes ago, Craig, about what the Liberals were running on, honest to God, the OAC thing is kind of the thing that pops to mind.
Buck a Ride Transit was my first one.
Buck a Ride, Buck a Beer,
and,
Buck a Ride.
Yeah, yeah, and right. I had Cheryl, I had Cheryl Ruth, who knows as much about transit in the city as anybody, on this podcast and said, hey, how do you think Buck a Ride Transit would help LTC? And her essential response was not really at all.
No.
She's like, what we need is more buses to get people to more places.
Yeah.
Whether it costs a dollar or $2.75 is not really the big consequential difference there. What she said is we need more buses to get more people more places. If we're going to spend a few billion dollars, that's how you do it. And I think she's right.
But they're like throwaway issues. It's like when Ford the first time was Buck a Beer, right?
Yeah.
Or Hudak was, remember he was going to have the prisoners on the side of the road doing that.
Oh, chain gangs.
And
yeah.
Chain gangs, right?
Chain it's like, gangs and the ankle bracelets.
Ankle
bracelets,
right? Like those are, like, give me a break. These are serious times and these serious issues. And say what you want to say about Ford, but he tapped. And there's another thing. You love Ford, you hate Ford, right? He's like, you have strong opinions when it comes to Doug Ford. There's still, after 4 years of a Ford premier, there's not a lot of people that are thinking, I'm kind of undecided about this guy. You either love him, you don't, right? But the one thing that even his detractors will say is he's not phony. You know, they might call him a buffoon. They might say he's not an intellect. They may say all of these things, but he's not phony. He, you know, I think he gives his cell phone out and people call him randomly.
Yeah.
He's out there making cheesecakes on the YouTube videos. Yeah. He's out there shoveling snow, right? I think a lot of people see that and they kind of like, you know, smirk, whatever, but I don't think they see it as an act, even, right? I think
but Andrea took that because she was going to represent the everyday people. So as I heard that coming from her lips, I'm thinking, I'm an everyday person.
She said
person.
Everyday people?
Yeah. I'm an everyday person. What?
I don't know about that, Cheryl. I'm not sure. Are you really?
Isn't everyone an everyday person?
All right. Of course we all are. That's the irony. So this is for the everyday people. Well, yeah, but I'd never vote for you, Andrea.
Yeah.
So don't use that. But that's exactly what the folksy Ford is like.
Yeah, but you can't fake the folksy, right?
No, like it's like you can't.
Like,
absolutely.
How many American politicians do we see that it's like, oh, you're putting on a, like, that's a show, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, a good example of that, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris. Joe Biden, right? People love him, they hate him, but they're like, that's who he is, right? He's that's who he is. Kamala Harris or Hillary Clinton or something like that, like, it seems like it's an act or it's contract. And Hudak, I know we've said that name 3-4 times, but it's like, you're putting on a shtick, right?
I'll say this on behalf of Tim Hudak. Suze Morrison was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and she talked about how everyone at Queen's Park thinks that Tim Hudak is a super nice guy
and really like him.
But he took some bad advice from some people that really made some very poor choices.
Oh, totally.
And this was, and those campaigns were the result of that.
But that's
bad
the
advice.
Leader. That's the leader.
Oh, yeah.
The leader.
The leader has to decide what advice is good and bad. And if he takes the bad advice, it's on him. Absolutely.
Here's a plate of poo-poo. Now I want you to eat it.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, come on. Like, he used not 1 ounce of gray cell. He was a terrible leader.
Well,
and it was reflective in our campaign. Yep.
There's that saying, a leader with no followers is just a person going for a walk.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and again, not to crap on, twice in one podcast, not to crap on Hudak, right? But I'm just talking about examples of leaders as juxtaposed against Ford.
Yes.
Right? And so that, you know, people can get that through the screens and through their iPads and through their TVs. They can kind of get that vibe of
but
sincerity.
I love Del Duca took his glasses off. They just changed my whole feeling of voting.
let's talk about that, the Liberals, and then we'll talk about the voter turnout thing. We've got to get out of here. But before we do that, I do want to remind folks that this podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London, Lifestyle with a Drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, Luxury Redefined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Stephen Del Duca is not going to be the leader of the Ontario Liberals going forward here. What the hell do they do? Because they've got 8 seats. Like, well, I just don't know what the future of the Ontario Liberals looks like. What do you all think?
Pull it out of the hat.
Yeah, I. You know what? I mean, going into this election campaign, I remember thinking to myself, you know, there's a lot of Ontario Liberals who think, we're back, baby. We're back in this one. And I'm sorry, but when you take the kind of shellacking that they took in the last election, you don't, like, your time in the wilderness is not just one election cycle.
Yeah, that's a multi-election shellacking.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, go back to the progressive conservatives of, in 1993 in the federal election. When you get your ass handed to you like that, mm-hmm. you don't just say, oh, well, let's get them next time. Things will be better in 4 years. It takes a couple of election cycles and some inspiring policy and an inspiring leader to come back from that kind of ass whipping.
Using that analogy, the progressive conservative federal party essentially never existed again mm-hmm. after that yeah. 1993 shellacking. Like that yeah. was it.
Well, then that's kind of where I'm going with this, is that there are some parallels here. And what you saw coming out of 1993 was, you know what, guys, maybe we need to kind of look at how, you know, a potential merger or whatever. Now, I'm not suggesting that the Liberals and the NDP should automatically merge because, A, when we've talked about this, there's a hell of a lot of bad blood. And B, I mean, you know, the NDP is the progressive party in this province. Again, my opinion, the Liberal Party is the progressively branded party in the sense that, you know, they talk about being progressives, but sometimes the deeds don't match the words. So I think the Ontario Liberals have to take a really hard look at what they're going to be. Are they going to be, you know, the quote, call them the Bay Street progressives, or are they going to be the real alternative that is going to attract the progressive voter? Because in the last couple of elections, that's not what they've been. And so do they decide to say, all right, well, we have to outflank the NDP on the left, make them the you know, what we were, and we will be the truly progressive party in this province? Or do they stay on the road they're on and just hope that, you know, within a couple of election cycles, the naturally governing party at the provincial level goes back to, you know, that kind of ideal? I don't see it happening because I don't know who they've got in the wings as far as leadership, because I don't think Kate's it.
No. Oh, no. Is it
Mitzi Hunter? She's won two elections in a row. I think that makes her the only one.
No. The issue with identity is the problem is politicians come and go, candidates come and go, but the advisors seem to stick with the party for a long time, and they just make the same mistakes except with a different leader. So I think this whole election, the Liberals and the NDP should just all have a cleansing enema and just get all that out of there and start afresh. Because if you didn't, we had to do that federally for the Conservatives. If you don't start fresh and look at yourself, really look at yourself, you don't move.
Well,
you don't
saw it federally with the Liberals, right? They had Stéphane Dion, then they had Ignatieff, and then they had, right? There was like, they kept running elections, they kept losing elections, and then it was just a placeholder until they found their guy.
Yeah.
Love him or not, Trudeau was the guy, and then he shot from third place.
And I don't think Justin Trudeau is a very good prime minister, but I think Justin Trudeau is a good campaigner.
Yeah, but
and then he's their guy. But you know, and they won three elections.
How many people say the same thing about Ford? Right?
Yeah,
when they said, because they may say Ford's not, you know, he's not a great mind or a great thinker or a great but the guy has won two super majorities here. And I don't know, we'll, 4 years is a lifetime in politics, but talk to me in 3 years and we'll see what it is. Because normally, if you look at it, it's usually you win re-election, and then a year before, you know, you step down and then somebody comes in and you try to infuse new life, right? Harris was Ernie Eves, mm-hmm. and then McGuinty was Kathleen Wynne, right? You see that. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, in the hours after the election, you know, he could be a guy that goes, could, if he wants it, could go for a third term.
I love the fact that Ford has reached out to people who have never been conservatives, have no time for the Conservative Party. He's gone out, and let's talk, I mean, the unions that he's brought in, and that they've campaigned, they've gone for with dollars for him, they've endorsed him. That's something that the Conservatives in this province never did. We've always been in this tight little Conservative box. But this has been good, and I'm happy to see people. When I went to vote, a guy comes up to me, "Hey, Cheryl, I know who you're voting for." And I said, "Well, I don't know who you're voting for." He was on a work break. He's a plumber. Yeah. I said, "Well, vote for the guy who's for unions." Who's that? Ford.
Interesting. Yeah.
Isn't that a thing? This is why I think London Fanshawe could be a gettable riding.
Oh, it could have been.
You know the one other thing real quickly? I know, Craig, we're probably coming up on time here.
Yeah, but I want to do one more thing, but you finish your thought.
It's just something that I don't think Londoners have an appreciation for. I don't have an appreciation for it. Is like we hear the term Ford Nation, right? It's like, man, if you're not... I think you don't know unless you know, but like it's a thing. It's a real thing. I think if you live in the 905, if you're in the Etobicoke, if you're in the Mississauga, like if you're in the suburbs out there, we hear Ford Nation, we kind of, some people like they chuckle or like, oh yeah, that's nice branding or whatever. It's a real thing. Like to see the numbers, Ford's, like if you look at the polling numbers, In the 905, in the suburbs, and let's be honest here, that's where you win and lose elections, yeah, right? True. We have three or four seats in London. That's not going to carry the day. You want to win an election, you go through the 905. Ford was winning in every single metric. Even like 18 to 35-year-olds, he was the preferred person, right? Because it's all
he was winning in every single economic metric.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like and not so, just age, but like we're talking about income levels.
Right.
Like it's unbelievable.
Right. And so how do you explain that? Like if you deconstruct it and you try to think about it, like how do you explain? Well, the same way that we're saying Del Duca failed or Horvath failed, we also have to give credit where credit is due, that the leader for the PC party, the premier of the province, succeeded in a way that the others couldn't, right? And that, you know, hate him or love him, but you got to give credit where credit's due.
Here's the other thing I'll say, just you mentioned the 905 Ford Nation. In the 905, so we're talking Brampton, we're talking Mississauga, we're talking Etobicoke. If you look at the federal election map, sea of red.
Sea of red.
Yeah. All blue provincially.
Yeah.
So the people that, these are low info voters that are voting Ford back in, those are the same damn voters that put Justin Trudeau in office.
Absolutely.
The same voters. So how did the provincial liberals not reach people that Justin Trudeau is getting to go vote for every time? Three elections in a row.
Mm-hmm. Well, North Center here federally is Peter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. London West federally is Ariel.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we say NDP bastions, but we've elected federal liberal members. So I know it's not the same, but the same voters.
I think it shows that Ontarians have been able to separate this in their minds between the provincial liberals and the federal liberals, and they're still fine with the federal liberals, but they're still ticked off at the Wynne McGuinty years. Absolutely. So therefore, they're going to continue to punch them about the ballot box.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yep.
Before we go, voter turnout. It was low. We're talking 37% at some of the numbers that we've seen lately.
It's like municipal.
And the Conservatives got less votes than they did 4 years ago. The Liberals, about the same. The NDP lost 900,000 votes. They didn't lose that many seats, but they lost 900,000 votes. What does that say about our political ecosystem in the province of Ontario right now? Was it just a post-pandemic election and everyone's like, I don't care about this, and walked away? Was that what happened?
No.
What is it then?
It's hard to kind of distill it down to one reason, but I think there is an element in all of this where people have just kind of tuned out, right? Like we've come through this 2-year pandemic where everyone's thoughts were mainly preoccupied with how do I not get this? Mm-hmm. When are we going to be done with this? How can I protect my family? All these different, you know, things that go with a pandemic. I just don't know that many people were thinking about, I better make sure I get out to vote. I think that's part of it. I think the hyper-partisan ecosystem in which we currently live has turned off a lot of people. And I think, people are also kind of thinking about the arrival of summer.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but none of them encouraging, that's for sure.
I also believe people are tired. If we'd have had this election after the summer, I think you would have seen something different. But I really believe that you will go to the polls if you want to get rid of them.
Exactly.
And nobody wanted to get rid of Ford because he was doing a damn good job. The people are employed. You look at London, our employment is up. Everything is good. So in spite of the interest rate and going up and all the rest of it, we live well in London. So I don't think anybody was voting anybody out. They wanted to keep what we had without...
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of similar to the last federal election, in many ways, right?
There's my dad would say to me all the time, he'd say, in the Canadian political experience, we do not elect new governments so much as we throw out old ones, mm-hmm. right? So if you're okay with the current government, then and the majority of people are okay with the current government, as evidenced by the results last night. The reason people didn't come out, the reason, Craig, that 900,000 less NDP votes were cast, the same reason that the Liberals weren't able to build on that, is because they were void of ideas, right? If you're sitting at home going, I want to vote, I'm not voting PC, but I need to vote for something, right? And the Liberals didn't give them that reason to get out of the chair, go to the ballot box and cast a vote. The NDP lost 900,000 votes. They didn't have a reason to go vote. And if you don't give them a reason to vote, yes, they're tired, Cheryl, right? Yes, exactly what you're saying, Scott, right? But at the end of the day, if you don't have a reason to vote for something, you're not going to leave. And that's what happened. And that's why they have a supermajority. So if you want to rectify it, then figure out something in the next 4 years of how to get people off their asses and back to the ballot. And otherwise, you're...
good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Write a book on that. Yeah. It's a bestseller.
Couldn't agree more. That's what it is. It just did not give people things to be excited about enough to go vote. Yeah. We got to wrap up because we're out of time. Thank you so much to Cheryl and Allie and Scott.
Craig, can I say one quick thing?
Yes, of course.
So nonpartisan. Can we end on a nonpartisan thing?
Yes, please.
This Sunday, the Our London family is the one-year anniversary of the June 6th attack that rocked this city of London. There's a couple events that are taking place. And thanks for indulging me, Craig. I know we've got to go.
Anytime.
This Sunday at 1 o'clock, there's a massive rally that's taking place at Oakridge Secondary School. So for those who don't know where Oakridge is, that's on the corner of Oxford and Hyde Park. At 1 o'clock, there'll be some speakers, moments of silence, and really a healing moment for the city of London. And then we're all going to march collectively from Oakridge Secondary School to the mosque at 151 Oxford. If you can find a couple minutes out of your day to come out and show your symbolic support on Sunday, it would mean the world to, I know me and I know so many different people, the outpouring of support that happened in the immediate aftermath of June 6th was everything at the end of the day. In 1 year, as we kind of relive these things, to have that support again would be great. And then on the 6th, there's a vigil at the actual site of the attack on Hyde Park and South Carriage, I believe at 5 o'clock. And again, if Londoners, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you want to show your support, you don't know how to show your support, I don't know what I should say, what should I do, come on out. And your presence alone means everything.
Yeah, you don't have to say anything. And I'll be there covering that for London News.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks, everybody.
I'll be there for that. Allie and Scott and Cheryl, thank you so much for coming in and doing the roundtable with us. Get to those events this weekend if you can. Yeah. And we will talk to you next week here on the Craig Needles podcast, which of course is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London, lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury redefined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.